Chapter 21. Nice Massey's footfalls on the bridge. The engineer walked over to port and returned, passing behind the chair several times. Captain Welly detected an unusual character, as of prudent care in this prowling. The near presence of that man brought with it always a recrudescence of moral suffering for Captain Welly. It was not remorse. After all, he had done nothing but good to the poor devil. There was also a sense of danger, the necessity of a greater care. Massey stopped and said, "So you still say you must go?"
"I must indeed."
"And you couldn't at least leave the money for a term of years?"
"Impossible."
"Can't trust it with me without your care, eh?" Captain Welly remained silent. Massey sighed deeply over the back of the chair.
"It would just do to save me," he said in a tremulous voice.
"I've saved you once." The chief engineer took off his coat with careful movements, and proceeded to feel for the brass hook screwed into the wooden stanchion. For this purpose he placed himself right in front of the binnacle, thus hitting completely the compass card from the quartermaster at the wheel.
"Oon."
The Lascar at last murmured softly, meaning to let the white man know that he could not see to steer. Mr. Massey had accomplished his purpose. The coat was hanging from the nail, within 6 inches of the binnacle. And directly he had stepped aside the quartermaster, a middle-aged, pockmarked, Sumatra Malay, almost as dark as a Negro, perceived with amazement that in that short time, in this smooth water, with no wind at all, the ship had gone swinging far out of her course. He had never known her get away like this before. With a slight grunt of astonishment he turned the wheel hastily, to bring her head back north, which was the course. The grinding of the steering chains, the chiding murmurs of the Serang, who had come over to the wheel, made a slight stir, which attracted Captain Wally's anxious attention. He said, "Take better care." Then everything settled to the usual quiet on the bridge. Mr. Massey had disappeared. But the iron in the pockets of the coat had done its work, and the Sofala, heading north by the compass, made untrue by this simple device, was no longer making a safe course for Pangu Bay. The hiss of water parted by her stem, the throb of her engines, all the sounds of her faithful and laborious life, went on uninterrupted in the great calm of the sea, joining on all sides the motionless layer of cloud over the sky. A gentle stillness as vast as the world seemed to wait upon her path, enveloping her lovingly in a supreme caress. Mr. Massey thought there could be no better night for an arranged shipwreck. Run up high and dry on one of the reefs east of Pangu, wait for daylight hole in the bottom outboats Pangu Bay same evening. That's about it. As soon as she touched he would hasten on the bridge, get hold of the coat nobody would notice in the dark, and shake it upside down over the side, or even fling it into the sea. A detail. Who could guess? Coat been seen hanging there from that hook hundreds of times. Nevertheless, when he sat down on the lower step of the bridge ladder his knees knocked together a little. The waiting part was the worst of it. At times he would begin to pant quickly, as though he had been running, and then breathe largely, swelling with the intimate sense of a mastered fate. Now and then he would hear the shuffle of the Serang's bare feet up there. Quiet, low voices would exchange a few words, and lapse almost at once into silence. ... "Tell me directly you see any land, Serang."
"Yes, Tuan."
"Not yet."
"No, not yet,"
Captain Welly would agree. The ship had been the best friend of his decline. He had sent all the money he had made by, and in the Sofala to his daughter. His thought lingered on the name. How often he and his wife had talked over the cot of the child in the big stern cabin of the Condor. She would grow up, she would marry, she would love them, they would live near her, and look at her happiness, it would go on without end. Well, his wife was dead. To the child he had given all he had to give. He wished he could come near her, see her face once, live in the sound of her voice, that could make the darkness of the living grave ready for him supportable. He had been starved of love too long. He imagined her tenderness.
The Serang had been peering forward, and now and then glancing at the chair. He fidgeted restlessly, and suddenly burst out close to Captain Wally, "Tuan, do you see anything of the land?" The alarmed voice brought Captain Wally to his feet at once. He. See. And at the question, the curse of his blindness seemed to fall on him with a hundredfold force. "What's the time?" he cried. "3:30, Tuan. We are close. You must see. Look, I say. Look." Mr. Massey, awakened by the sudden sound of talking from a short doze on the lowest step, wondered why he was there. Ah! A faintness came over him. It is one thing to sow the seed of an accident, and another to see the monstrous fruit hanging over your head ready to fall in the sound of agitated voices. "There's no danger," he muttered thickly. The horror of incertitude had seized upon Captain Wally, the miserable mistrust of men, of things of the very earth. He had steered that very course 36 times by the same compass. If anything was certain in this world, it was its absolute, unerring correctness. Then what had happened? Did the Serang lie? Why lie? Why? Was he going blind too? Is there a mist? Look low on the water. Low down, I say. Tuan, there's no mist. See for yourself. Captain Wally steadied the trembling of his limbs by an effort. Should he stop the engines at once, and give himself away? A gust of irresolution swayed all sorts of bizarre notions in his mind. The unusual had come, and he was not fit to deal with it. In this passage of inexpressible anguish he saw her face, the face of a young girl with an amazing strength of illusion. No, he must not give himself away after having gone so far for her sake. Who steered the course? You made it? Speak the truth. Yeah, Tuan. On the course now. Look. Captain Wally strode to the binnacle, which to him made such a dim spot of light in an infinity of shapeless shadow. By bending his face right down to the glass he had been able before. Having to stoop so low, he put out, instinctively, his arm to where he knew there was a stanchion to steady himself against. His hand closed on something that was not wood but cloth. The slight pull adding to the weight, the loop broke, and Mr. Massey's coat falling, struck the deck heavily with a dull thump, accompanied by a lot of clicks. What's this? Captain Wally fell on his knees, with groping hands extended in a frank gesture of blindness. They trembled, these hands feeling for the truth. He saw it. Iron near the compass. Wrong course. Wrecker. His ship. Oh no. Not that. Jump and stop her, he roared out in a voice not his own. He ran himself hands forward, a blind man, and while the clanging of the gong echoed still all over the ship, she seemed to butt full tilt into the side of a mountain. It was low water along the north side of the strait. Mr. Massey had not reckoned on that. Instead of running aground for half her length, the Cephala butted the sheer ridge of a stone reef which would have been awash at high water. This made the shock absolutely terrific. Everybody in the ship that was standing was thrown down headlong. The shaken rigging made a great rattling to the very trucks. All the lights went out. Several chain guys, snapping, clattered against the funnel. There were crashes, pings of parted wire rope, splintering sounds, loud cracks. The masthead lamp flew over the bows, and all the doors about the deck began to bang heavily. Then, after having hit, she rebounded. Hit the second time the very same spot like a battering ram. This completed the havoc. The funnel, with all the guys gone, fell over with a hollow sound of thunder, smashing the wheel to bits, crushing the frame of the awnings, breaking the lockers, filling the bridge with a mass of splinters, sticks, and broken wood. Captain Wally picked himself up and stood knee-deep in wreckage, torn. Bleeding, knowing the nature of the danger he had escaped mostly by the sound, and holding Mr. Massey's coat in his arms. By this time stern, he had been flung out of his bunk, had set the engines astern. They worked for a few turns, then a voice bawled out, "Get out of the damned engine room, Jack!" And they stopped, but the ship had gone clear of the reef and lay still, with a heavy cloud of steam issuing from the broken deck pipes, and vanishing in wispy shapes into the night. Notwithstanding the suddenness of the disaster, there was no shouting, as if the very violence of the shock had half stunned the shadowy lot of people swaying here and there about her decks. The voice of the Serang pronounced distinctly above the confused murmurs, 8 fathom. He had heaved the lead. Mr. Stern cried out next in a strained pitch, where the devil has she got to? Where are we? Captain Wally replied in a calm bass, amongst the reefs to the eastward. You know it, sir? Then she will never get out again. She will be sunk in 5 minutes. Boats, stern. Even one will save you all in this calm. The Chinaman stokers went in a disorderly rush for the port boats. Nobody tried to check them. The Malays, after a moment of confusion, became quiet, and Mr. Stern showed a good countenance. Captain Wally had not moved. His thoughts were darker than this night in which he had lost his first ship. He made me lose a ship. Another tall figure standing before him amongst the litter of the smash on the bridge whispered insanely, say nothing of it. Massey stumbled closer. Captain Wally heard the chattering of his teeth. I have the coat. Throw it down and come along, urged the chattering voice. BBB boat. You will get 15 years for this. Mr. Massey had lost his voice. His speech was a mere dry rustling in his throat. Have mercy. Had you any when you made me lose my ship? Mr. Massey, you shall get 15 years for this. I wanted money. Money. My own money. I will give you some money. Take half of it. You love money yourself. There's a justice. Dot, Massey made an awful effort, and in a strange, half-choked utterance, you blind devil. It's you that drove me to it. Captain Wally, hugging the coat to his breast, made no sound. The light had ebbed forever from the world, let everything go. But this man should not escape scot-free. Stern's voice commanded, lower away. The blocks rattled. Now then, he cried, over with you. This way. You, Jack, here. Mr. Massey. Mr. Massey. Captain. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.